This is another podcast from BloomerBoomer.com.
And your host, Andy Asher.
Today's podcast is interesting from so many different levels. If you are amazed by technological and medical breakthroughs, you'll be fascinated by the show. And for anyone who suffers from or knows someone with macular degeneration, this will be even more important. For the techies, if you will, this is about an amazing development where a tiny telescope the size of a green pea is actually implanted into the human eye. That operation, for example, might allow a grandparent to clearly see a grandchild for the first time. To tell this story, we're going to hear from two people. We will talk to Dr. Sam Garg at the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute at the University of California, Irvine, who specializes in cataract, corneal, and reflective surgery. We'll also hear from 80-year-old Dan Dunbar, who a year ago was legally blind. Today, he can do things like snow skiing, for example, or go back to the other things that he loved. First, Dr. Garg.
The patient who will benefit from this is a patient who has, you know, end-stage macular degeneration, which is a subset of the millions of patients that have macular degeneration. You know, probably, you know, depends on what source you look at. You know, anywhere between 30% and 50% of those patients have advanced, you know, macular degeneration, sort of end-stage macular degeneration. And to take one step back, macular degeneration affects the central vision. And so people are left with a blind spot in sort of their high-definition vision, if you will. So they maintain their peripheral vision, but their line-of-sight vision is obscured or missing. And so if you were to look at, you know, if a patient was to look at their grandchild's face, well, they would be missing the nose, the mouth, the eyes, you know, sort of in that area, but they may get a, you know, they'll be able to see sort of their hair and maybe, you know, their chest, but you'll miss sort of their face. Okay, and no matter how you look, you won't be able to see that center part of your vision.
Okay. Well, first of all, my name is Dan Dunbar, and I've had a vision problem for, early 2000. I only had a couple of operations in my life, but, you know, it wasn't very much. In fact, it was almost really a non-event. I was awake during the operation, couldn't see much. But I was awake, and, you know, they closed up, put a patch over my eye, and told me after a little bit I could take it off and start using it. And it was just almost that simple. There's no problem during the surgery, no pain or discomfort or anything like that. And after the surgery, there's still no pain or, discomfort. For example, I had to learn how to look at something. I'd spent a lot of my life looking away because if I looked at something, I couldn't see it. So now with a telescope, you look at it and you can see it. And it's big and it's clear and it's great.
That, of course, was Dan Dunbar, who is an engineer by training. Now he jokingly says he works for his wife. But Dan was one of the first to receive that implant, and as Dr. Garg explains, the device is a telescope.
That's exactly right. It's a telescope that magnifies the vision. So you would, in the implanted eye, it would be magnified. The images would be magnified. And so if you think about a blind spot on, just say you, again, looking back at someone's grandchild, if a patient has macular degeneration and you're looking at that child in an eye with macular degeneration, their face is blurred out. If you magnify everything, what happens is that blind spot becomes smaller. And so then you recruit sort of the peripheral retina or mid-peripheral retina to look at that child's face. And so instead of the whole face being blurry, then maybe just the nose and the mouth is blurry.
And for Dan, of course, it's made a big difference in his life, from everything to the simple to the more exciting.
Yeah. For one thing, I can see where I'm going. And I can see people at the end of the run. And, you know, I can see the condition of the snow. And so I don't ski as fast as I used to, but I still can ski, and that's important. And it is enormous. It's just really incredible to be able to, well, for example, I could see a traffic intersection and a crosswalk. I could see at least the first 20 feet of a crosswalk. But I never could really tell whether there was a light that said walk or don't walk, right? It didn't matter how big the street was, I just couldn't see it. Well, now I can see it. So I can do things that I really couldn't do well or at all before. I'm a model railroader, and, you know, as my eyesight deteriorated, the gauge of the trains that I played with went from N, which is extremely small, to O gauge, which is Lionel trains, and it was always hard to make any kind of soldering action where I had to put a solder and a wire together with a hot iron. But now it's a snap because everything's so big, I have no problem at all of locating the wire where I want it, locating the soldering iron where I want it, and putting the two together and making the connection. It's just great.
Dr. Garg, we've been speaking with Dan Dunbar, of course, whom you know very well, and he is just so excited about the results of his transplant. Could you talk a little bit more specifically about what it is and a little bit more about the telescope?
So the beauty of this device compared to some, you know, there are other telescopes available, and those telescopes are externally mounted, and so the when they're externally mounted, what happens is you have to be looking through the telescope to get the effect. So if you move your eye to the right and you go outside of it, well, then you can't see. Whereas with the telescope inside the eye, no matter where your eye looks, you're going to get the same vision. Does that make sense? And so that's great. And so then you have both hands free to do what you have to do. You know, there's some of these telescopes that are mounted on glasses, and that can be quite heavy on the face or on the nose. And then there's other telescopes that are handheld, which requires one hand to be utilized to hold the telescope in place, whereas this one is implanted in the eye. You don't feel it. You don't see it. And it allows for natural eye movements, natural scanning, things of that nature. And because you're using it all the time, the adaptability is very good.
So I get, I think I'm now at 20/50 vision and distance. And then you have to have glasses for near field because you're dealing with this three-power telescope. So you have to have some way of compensating for this thing that doesn't like to be, like to have to focus up close. So I started off using a device called an optovisor, which is what I've used for 30 or 40 years, a jeweler's headpiece. And that's what I use when I work on a computer and write and do that sort of thing, because it gives me really good close vision. And the optometrist gave me a set of glasses that allow me to see menus and things like that in restaurants. And so, you know, I'm getting along.
Well, Dr. Gard, it sounds like this is a very new procedure. How long has it been around?
A little over a year. It's been approved from Medicare, and I could get you the exact date. I don't recall it off the top of my head, but it's about a year and a half, I want to say. And then the FDA approval was, you know, probably 6 months before that.
And patient Dan Dunbar becomes, modestly, engineer Dan Dunbar, and he still marvels at the technology.
Well, I'm an engineer by trade, okay? And I've had some optical experience. I'm not an optical engineer by any means, but I've had dealt with quite a lot of that stuff. And the thing that I was most concerned about was whether or not it would work at all up close because of the distortion. And this lens Oh, there's maybe some edge distortion, but it's really almost not noticeable at all. And so it works really good. So in that sense, I would call it revolutionary because it's done so well. But it behaves like any kind of telescope. I mean, you go get a pair of binoculars and you use one side of it, and then that's basically what you're seeing with the implant. But the integration of it into the eye itself, and then the probably the biggest single issue that I had, and I think a number of the other patients have, is the integration of the implant into the brain. The mind has to cope with this. And in my case, 80 years, it saw the world as a certain size out of the eyes. And you stick a thing that's three times closer than used to be, and there's some issues that you have to learn to get along with. And the mind is intriguing organ. It does things that I didn't think was possible, but it does. And they're beginning to do more tests on that because the mind controls most of the focusing, and it determines how well I'm going to see certain things. Not so much the lens, it's the mind. And it's very, very interesting. So those things are intriguing to me. I wouldn't call them necessarily revolutionary because telescope is a telescope, you know. But it is interesting how they were able to take a telescope and make it down to the size of a pea and insert it into the eye and get it aligned up so that it, you know, I don't have a vision direction problem. It's very, very interesting how they've been able to do that.
And as for how these kind of procedures go, well, Dr. Garg says it's so new.
It's very new. And part of, you know, we're seeing patients who would otherwise be candidates for it, but who have had cataract surgery previously. And so one of the things for physicians to know is that these patients, you know, we should hold off on doing cataract surgery on them to see if maybe they would benefit from this device in one of their eyes and then, you know, regular cataract surgery in their fellow eye. Well, yeah, it's done. So the actual surgery is done. Part of the surgery is removing the existing cataract and then implanting this telescope as opposed to generally during cataract surgery, we implant a intraocular lens. It's a lens to refocus the light. Instead of that, we implant the telescope. So patients to have had this done cannot have had cataract surgery previously. So generally, you know, I mean, the approval for these patients is over 75 with bilateral advanced vision loss, so worse than 20/160 vision. They have to have, like I said, they have to be what's called phakic, which means that they cannot have had cataract surgery, and then their eye has to be otherwise healthy. Their cornea has to be healthy. They have to have enough space in the eye for this device. This device is about, you know, five times the thickness of a standard cataract, intraocular lens. So it's much thicker than a standard intraocular lens. So there's definitely anatomic considerations. And then the other thing is, prior to surgery, we have an external simulator that we use, and usually the low vision specialist helps us out with this, in which they are able to see if the patient would get an improvement using that external simulator. And if they show a five-letter improvement on their eye chart, well, then that's a pretty good indication that implanting this device, they will get a significant improvement in their vision.
Meanwhile, the engineering side of patient Dan Dunbar just couldn't resist making some measurements.
I was very interested in it. And, you know, and then, of course, when I got the implant, I spent a lot of the time making measurements. You know, not that that did anything of significance, but it, you know, you, if you're curious about it, just go get yourself a set of low-power binoculars, 3 or so power binoculars, and then sort of look around using that as your basic vision, and you'll see a lot of things that you don't really, it takes for granted, I guess, and it requires some adjustments, and because they don't put the implant in both eyes. They only put the implant in one eye, because the implant with the telescope has a, you know, you have a very reduced field of view. I would guess my field of view through the telescope is approximately 70 degrees, maybe 80 degrees. And so you depend upon your other eye to give you the peripheral view. And that's important for walking and navigating and a lot of things that you need to know, you know, more than what you can see out of a tunnel, okay? Because it is important that you, the patient, be aware of the change that's going to happen when that vision is reduced. And so, you know, yeah, well, one thing that I said, and I want to make sure you're aware of, is that I talked about being dilated for a month and a half. I understand now the dilation is a month or less. And the condition that happens when you're dilated heavily is that there's enough area around the lens that the mind uses that information rather than the information through the lens. You'd think that, you know, here you got a nice lens, it's giving you a good clear view. Now, why would the mind use something that is more difficult? Well, it's more, the way they explained it to me, it is more familiar. And so the mind doesn't like that new vision because it's not normal. And so it will use the peripheral view, not the peripheral vision, but the vision is coming through the eyeball around the lens. Because there's an area around that is not, when you're dilated, it's not closed. Sure. So a little hard to explain, but and they kept it that way for me for a month and a half. So I really didn't get 2 months really. So I didn't really get to use the lens until they quit the dilation. Then the iris closes down, and the only thing coming through the eye is through the lens. And now the mind has to take care of that, use that.
The procedure itself takes about an hour and a half. That's probably overestimates. A little over an hour probably is more accurate. You come in and you go home the same day. You leave with a little patch and shield over your eye, and you come back the next day. We take the patch and shield off. At that point, we make sure that, you know, the eye is healing well, and then we get the occupational therapist involved in getting you used to using the device and the new vision that you have with that device.
And finally, Dan, can you talk a little bit about some of your regular everyday activities using the telescope that's in your eye?
Well, working on a computer is a lot easier because I can see it real clear. I can read, although it's still hard because of the there's a geometry issue when you have a telescope and you're trying to read a long line. It's important, I found, to be able to read more than one or two words. Otherwise, you kind of lose track of where you are. And so that's an issue. And I'm getting better at doing that. On a computer, it's pretty easy. But on written, it's kind of hard. And so I don't read written much, or at least for any length of time, because it takes a lot of effort to do it that way. But I can see it, you know, I can see the words.
And you can see people who are referring to you
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's probably the most significant thing that happened was when I realized I was looking, when I learned to look at people, not off, you know, 15 degrees away like I used to do. Look right at people, and my God, I could see their face, and I could see their eyes, and who they were looking at, and how, you know, what's going on. It was like, oh, wow, you talk about something astounding. That was astounding, because I'd forgotten that I wasn't doing that. And so, you know, I didn't really know what people looked like.
Dr. Garg, for somebody who wants to get more information about this procedure and more of the details, what would you recommend that they do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the company has set up a website, www.centrasight.com, C-E-N-T-R-A-S-I-G-H-T, which will point, you know, the patient to local sites. It's, you know, there are national sites. The other thing, there's a phone number to call, which is 877-99-SIGHT, in which they would go over some basic screening criteria with you and then get you hooked up with a center in your area.
Dr. Sam Garg and Dan Dunbar, we thank you both for bringing us such a fascinating story. And for our listeners today, we thank you.